I went quest to the Tasmanian tiger. I crossed all the primary forest there. I broke a shoulder. So I just crawled out of that gorge. It took me 3 days to get out of there. The bones will come back in his position by himself. I finished my expedition. I was nearly at the end of it. And I finished with a make an immobilization with my left arm. And I was pushing the cart and finished like that. If one tree fell near me, I would not be able to run because there is too much vegetation. So when you are in those situations, you need to trust the universe. You need to trust that you are in the right spot. There is some spot in Australia in the desert, you're not supposed to be there. They always knew where I was. When they arrived, this little community, the traditional owner there, the boss, he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, good girl, because he knew that I went around and around. Because my mission in life is really clear for me. I'm this little bridge between human and nature. That was my calling. That's who I was. Hello?
Hello, Sarah. How are you?
Good. And you?
I'm good. I'm good. It must be cold up there.
Oh, look at that. Look.
Oh, wow. That is beautiful.
Yeah, it's like 9 o'clock in the morning and now it's like minus 10 now.
Oh, wow. Is this Switzerland?
Yeah, that's I built a tiny house in the forest when I come back from my Tasmanian expedition. And it's really like in the middle of the forest. Look.
Wow.
Yeah.
How far is it from the nearest town?
It's near. It's nothing far. It's just, you know, Switzerland is everything is near. It's not like Australia. And it's like 20 minutes, 30 minutes walk to get here.
Huh. You said Tasmania trip or what's the Tasmania thing you do?
The Tasmanian expedition, you mean?
Yeah, what's that?
You didn't know that one. Oh, I in 2017 I went through Tasmania, the west coast, from the south to the north, and was the quest to the Tasmanian tiger, and I crossed all the primary forest there. And through the canopy in the middle of the forest, it's this crazy horizontal bushes, and it's been a really crazy expedition. And then I was nearly at the end of it and I fall in a gorge and I broke a shoulder. Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole.
Did you have to helicopter?
Yeah, no, because the gorge was so deep. And then I was following the lips of the gorge, you know. Yeah, I was in a crest. I was on the top of it, and then I saw there was this big gap, so I needed to go down in order to go up again, to go to the crest again. Yeah. And I was pissed off and I was like, oh my god, that's gonna take me all day, you know. And I was like, oh, I was not happy, and looking on the edge of the gorge, you know, thinking I've got some ropes, I can do some abseiling and everything, and it's not stable enough. And I go down, further down, further down. And then I did the thing again. And then that was so unstable that everything fall down. So all the trees and, you know, the earth, the fallen branches and everything went down. I went through, it was like an avalanche of vegetation, and with me in the middle. And I black out. I just arrived at the end of the, in the middle of the gorge. I black out and I just get conscious again. I was wet and I was like, oh my god. And I look up and there was this little triangle of light, you know. And I was thinking, oh my god, my satellite phone on my tracker system is not going through that little hole there. And I crawl out of that gorge for 3 days with I could feel my left side was not working anymore. So I did what I do best, meaning it's one step after another. And lucky me, because I had so much experience that I knew mentally, I knew how to use my strengths. And but at the same time, the pain was really, really strong. And so I just crawled out of that gorge. Took me 3 days to get out of there. Yeah, it's been a challenging one.
Did you, when you fell down, did you have your backpack or your equipment, or did you lose it?
No, I had 35 kilogram backpack, and it was really a big chunk of, you know, those rainforest earth, really loose earth with stone, a little bit of vegetation, decomposition wood, and everything was like falling down with me in it. And then I just collapsed. Yeah, I had blackouts. I think probably the shock. And then I kind of stand up there. I was like, okay, I'm good, I'm okay. And my legs was functioning, everything. I was like, oh, what is this pain here? And I went, the story is pretty long, but I went through, finally I managed to get out of that gorge to a clearing, because the chopper cannot land if it's not clear, you know, if it's not, because Tasmania rainforest on the west coast is just canopy all the way. So I did, yeah, so finally a chopper came and rescued me. And I went to the emergency, the ER, and the doctor there said to me, oh, it's not broken. Say, no, it's not. It's probably dislocated shoulder, you know, because the pain was really, really, really strong. And he said, but you're not. And he asked me, he was really shocked. They said, but you're not in pain. I said, no, I get used to the pain. And he said, oh my God. And I went through the X-ray thing and come back. And I had like, you know, at the end of the shoulder, you've got like this ball, you know, and then that was cut off net, really clear cut. The bones, he was here, and he couldn't believe that, doctor. And then I say, what we gonna do about it, you know? I say, oh my God, he said to me something really lovely. He said to me, this is why I become a doctor, because nature is really well done. The bones will come back in his position by himself. And I said, no way. He said, you will see, but you have to lay down and not moving. And I said, okay, well, I can do that. And for 1 week, I lay down, I haven't moved. And then I came back to the hospital. I was in Burnie, in the middle of nowhere, in Tasmania. And he said, well done. Look, the bones get closer and closer. Anyway, 3 weeks later, the calcification start. And I said to him, well, I'm off. I'm not staying here anymore. He said, what are you talking about? You need 6 weeks of immobilization. I said, no, I'm off. And I finished my expedition. I was nearly at the end of it. I bought a cart, a type of cart, and I finished my expedition with a cart. I changed my routes, and I finished with I make an immobilization with my left arm, and I was pushing the cart and finished like that. Yeah, that was amazing expedition, actually. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful Tasmania.
And then you ended up in Hobart.
Sorry?
And then you ended up at Hobart, the bottom city of Tasmania.
I start on the bottom. So Hobart was the location where I prepare everything. Then
Yes.
I went to the west side of Hobart. There is a western point there. And then I went through the forest. I didn't use trails, and I went through the forest. But some days, you know, those forests, they are so dense. The vegetation is so crazy inside those forests. Some days I was doing 12 kilometers and doing 12 hours for 2 to 3 kilometers. Yeah, because there is a type of vegetation. It's endemic to Tasmania, which is the horizontal bushes, which is a type of tree who stand up for 2 3 years, then fall down, and then it's a lot of little branches growing. 2 3 years, those branches fall down, and then another one there, another one, and sometimes those walls of vegetation. And I needed to climb on the top to go around. I couldn't go through it. I needed to climb. And you know, when you high up there and you're thinking, I hope one of those branch not, you know, like you're just like hanging there and think, I'm good, I'm good. And yeah, it was a challenging physical challenge. Yeah.
You're climbing on top of it with a 30-kilo pack.
35, yeah.
30, wow.
But you have to remind yourself that I've been doing this for 25 years. Yeah. So lucky me, because that expedition tested all my knowledge and all my inner strengths and all my mental tools that I use during those expeditions. And if I would have done that expedition at the beginning of my career of an explorer, that would have been a different outcome, I think. Yeah.
And then, are you packing dry food? What do you use for food?
Yeah, so why that backpack was so heavy on that expedition, it was because I had a pack raft with me. Pack raft, it's a little really amazing thing. It's a little boat, a flattable boat, a tiny, tiny one, just for one person a little bit of more space for the backpack. And that's allowed me to cross the body of water because Tasmania, it's all about the water. So sometimes you find those big river, big flooding, inlet on the West Coast. And so that was really helpful to cross some of those body of water. Yeah, because it's cold, it's wet all the time. So if you fall down the river again, it's pretty hard to warm up again. The hypothermia, it's always the problem there. You need to be careful about that. Yeah.
And then how did you deal with the weather and season? Because I know Tasmania, I just came from there. It's like eight seasons in a day. That's what they say.
Yes.
It's hot, cold, windy. It just changes every hour.
And that was the summertime.
Yeah.
That was the summertime and that was crazy. Yeah, but in the West, it's really, you know, the closest body of land, it's Antarctica there. So that crazy weather system, it's actually makes sense because it's coming from Antarctica and just hit the northwest, southwest bottom there, this corner, and just affect all the coast there. That's why they've got this beautiful dark pine forest and beautiful rainforest because of that.
How do you find, like, right now, we started this call, I love how your energy is really, really high. You have this sort of vibrant energy. I'm naturally an introverted, so I like traveling. I like hiking on my own and hiking in silence or listening to music. So I'm naturally more lower energy. Are you naturally high energy or what's your energy like, Sarah?
No, I'm an introvert like you, actually. Yeah. I think I can do both. I can, you know, I do big speaking events with 1,500 people in a room, and for 2 hours you need to be like good at what you're doing, you know, to keep everybody like on point of the storytelling. It has to be good. And then I can go. I did a 3-year expedition alone, for example, from Siberia to Australia. So it's, I can do both because I think I master one thing I master over the years, it's to be able to see the beauty in little thing. And this, you know, like now we've got this beautiful sunrise there, and this kind of little thing, you know, it just feed my soul, and I'm happy to see a bird, I'm happy to just be there with the elements, and it's just enough for me. So I never listen to music, for example. Never, never, never. Silence for me is the source of everything. So for example, next week I need to go to Paris to sign a contract with my publishing house over there. And I go there for 2 days, and this city, it's never, never sleep, you know? And it's noise everywhere, it's agitation. I've got dinner, I've got party, I've got all these things going on. But I can do that, but I need my bubble. I need to go back here and I need to be in my little environment and recharge from it. Yeah. It's just a balance in life that I finally find it because it took me years to find that balance where my inner self, my water inside me are quiet. It's not agitated. Everything with noise, it makes me agitated inside. So I need some really silent environment to be able to be centered, be clear, be one with myself, not looking for outside. You know, like when you say, "Ah, let's go for a coffee," or "I need a coffee," or yeah, I don't need all of those things anymore. I just need to just be quiet inside, feeling my center right. And when I'm like that, I can do whatever. I know I'm powerful.
It's weird when I'm sort of traveling, hiking out in nature or on a holiday trip, I don't touch my phone. I have no cravings to go on social media, no cravings to go on YouTube or TikTok. But when I come back home, for some reason, I'm craving that dopamine. I'm craving the interaction. I'm fighting, I'm resisting against the phone, and it's so much more difficult.
Yeah, it's. I think it's everything has to do with the environment because you used to that environment. And in that environment, it's what you do. So go back to discipline. Discipline, it's, I always say that, but discipline, it's freedom. Because for example, this morning I wake up at 5, I did my yoga, I make the fire first, I do my yoga, my meditation, and then my day can start. I do a little green juice and then my day can start. Before that, you can nothing happen, nothing. I don't touch my phone. This is what has to be done. And then I've got breakfast, check my phone, do a few things, and then I go walking with my dog. I do a big walk, big training walk with my dog. And then I start my day. It's around 9, 10 o'clock by then. You know, I've got an assistant, and she say, she's full of energy. And she say, so where are we gonna start in the morning? I say, well, I start at around 9 and 10, and I don't want you to start before that because that will stress me, you know, to receive emails and things if I'm not ready. And she say, what? We're gonna start at 9, 10 o'clock. I say, yeah, that's the plan. You do whatever you want before, but this is my time. This is the most important time of the day, and I want you to do the same. Do your thing, you know, fill you up, you know, before starting working, because I think we forgot that most of the time.
Sarah, one thing I struggle with is when I come back from a holiday trip, it takes me roughly around 30 days to kick back into discipline, kick back into the routine and all the good habits. Because I guess when I go on a holiday, I guess when you're on holiday, you're not doing, or one on those expeditions, you're not doing green juice, you're not doing the yoga every morning. Do you transition back into discipline and routine, or does it take a bit? Is there any tricks?
So now it's I just go back straight away, but it took me years to be able to get that. The secret, it's not letting your brain choose. You leave your little devil inside saying, oh yeah, I'm gonna have breakfast before my workout, and because I'm quite hungry this morning, and no, this is workout time and this is not breakfast time. And another little trick could help you is to write in a piece of paper in a, before you go to bed, you write first like a to-do list, and you write workout, read 3 pages, then breakfast, then meeting. And then you stick that piece of paper where you can actually see it properly. And then you don't think, you just do it.
When I sort of get back to sort of civilization and work, you know, now I'm 30 days in, I realize work is hard. It's not fun at times. You have to do things you don't enjoy. But that's sort of the beauty of life. You have to be disciplined. But every time I go traveling and I come back, you know, when I go on a road trip, you know, you feel like free. You feel like the purpose of life is to be happy and have freedom and not be restricted to a routine. And then I start second guessing if what I'm doing is my why. Or if what I'm doing is the correct thing. That always happens when I come back from a holiday trip or like a road trip.
I think it's a normal thing because we are human, you know. After all, you need to be gentle with your soul. Everything is impermanent, so everything moves around us. We are aging by the second, and we're growing, and everything is moving. Nature is moving, and we are moving at the same style, at same time. It's like an evolution, and that's why it's difficult to keep focus in one thing, because what's real now in 2 hours could be different. This is what we sometimes don't understand, the beauty of that growing, you know, the beauty of that. We are like a plant, you know, like you just put a little bit of water. So when you go in vacation, you put a bit more water and then you grow, and then you come back and then just like, oh my God, that was so good. I grow, I all my senses get nourished, and my soul, and I'm happy, and now I need to do those things, and oh my God, yeah. So it's the duality of life. It's just the beauty. Sometimes it's just all play and fun, and sometimes we've got things where we have to do things. But going back to what I said at the beginning, if you can see beauty in everything, in little moments, it's how you look at life. It's how you look at what, you know, you've got fish behind you. I can see. Yeah. So, you know, just like say hello to your fish and talking to them a little bit. And it's just amazing and just makes sense, you know? It's kind of your link with life. You link with life. It's just like touching down and looking at another life and thinking, okay, we are alive. It's amazing. Another day in this amazing planet. It's all worth it. And let's do this. And then you just do your chore and your thing, and you go to bed, and you just check up, do the checking again. You say, oh, I've done good today. Oh, that was a bloody shit day, you know, like really, that was a bad day. Tomorrow's gonna be better. And then you go to bed and you're okay with that. Be okay with the concept of life. It's just thousands of emotions per minute, and it's all normal, you know. There is no such a thing as a strong, successful, driving person 100% of the time. No, we are full of that. We are full of up and down. And it just be human. It means being human. Now in this humanity, if you can actually find a few tricks to help you focus and be with a good resonance with yourself and your life purpose, be one with that. It's make it easy because things make sense after a while.
When I was in Tasmania, I did the Cradle Mountain hike to the sort of top of Cradle Mountain.
You know, I went west of that. I
Okay.
was full bush bashing, as they say.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and I saw some crazy area where you can feel that like the last human was like long time ago. Well, I could feel like I was disturbing the normal order, you know, like that was wild. The birds was coming. There was not that many birds because under the canopy it's really dark. So the birds that I saw, they were coming really close to check out what I was. And that was crazy beautiful. And then I get to place where the sun was hitting a big rock in a gorge. There is a lot of little gorge like that. And there was a big rock in the middle, and the sun was coming from the top, hitting that rock. And I thought, oh my God, yes, some sun, because it's been raining so all the time. And so I went on the top of that rock, I curled up, and I was in the sun like that. Oh my God, I feel so good. And then suddenly I hear some drums and some type of ceremony things, you know? And this has happened sometimes where you get to a place where Aboriginal people have done ceremony before. And we call that the memory of location. Sacred place got a memory. And if you are tuned with nature, you're able to hear the remaining noise and the remaining things of those places. That's why Aboriginal people, when they say this is a sacred place, do not go there, because those places still, they've got an energy and they still resonate with nature without them being there. So I had this moment that, oh my God, I'm not in the right spot. I need to move now. That's not my spot. This is not the right place to be. I need to really honor this place and get out of there as soon as possible, because those places belong to the owner of those places, the Aboriginal people. That's why we don't understand really much the Aboriginal people those days, because we haven't been in nature enough to understand the link between all that magical world and nature and us also. That's one part of the problem.
So I was recently in Tasmania. I was doing a road trip around the island. I was on this hike. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about God and the universe. And like something clicked on that hike where I paused the podcast, I put my earphones in my phone, and I was like, universe, you know, I'm ready to listen. I'm ready to hear. Like, put me in the parallel universe where you're giving the most challenging, epic, awesome life. I'm ready to listen. I started just listening to whether it's, I don't know, the God, universe, the voice from within, listening to myself. And it was sort of telling, you know, Andy, you should try walk with your, you know, head up. Don't look down all the time. Here's a beautiful view. Sit down, take it in for 60 seconds. There's this big tree. You should go up and put your hand on it, feel it, and thank it. So I was just listening to these instructions, and that was the huge, like a big takeaway that I took from that trip. Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to share that because that was something new to me.
Yeah, it's the beauty of nature, because out there the trees, and that's a scientific fact, the trees' roots are connected to each other, to all the tree. So if one's got a deficient in nutrition, the other friend near it will feed his roots and help him, you know. And it's the same with the mushroom, it's the same with everything on the ground. And they are all interlinked. So it's the same thing about energy. So when you touch one tree, you don't just touch one tree, you touch the whole forest. And the energy, we are full of energy. For example, when I walk, I don't get sick, I get stronger. I get stronger and stronger and stronger. I may lose weight a lot, but I get stronger and stronger and stronger. And I had this moment in a Gobi desert where I had this really tough going from Siberia to Mongolia, across Mongolia, in the middle, and the first half it was quite challenging. Mongolian guys, just I guess that was fun for them to have this blonde girl in the middle of nowhere in a tent at night. So they usually raid my camp on a horseback and try to steal my stuff, my tent and everything. And so I didn't sleep much for the first 2 months. And then I reached the southern part, which was the Gobi Desert. They follow me through the desert. I had this moment of epiphany where, you know, when you've got two guys drunk with bottle of vodka on a horse, and the big guy, they've got big belly and the scary guy, and then they're following me, and I was pushing my cart, going faster and faster, and then that hit me and say, Sarah, where are you going? They're gonna come, they're gonna reach you in one point. It's not need to rush, there is no need to run, there is no need to all that. And it's open space. There's like sand everywhere. The wind pick up. And then suddenly I say, okay, now you stop and you talk to those guys. I stop. I wait for them to catch up with me. I look at them. They were naughty little drunk guy. And then suddenly in my head, I had this thought thinking, God, they are really drunk. You know, drunk. You cannot talk to drunk or drug people or whatever. They don't think straight. And I said to myself, God, I'm not going to get away with talking to them out of this situation. By then, I was speaking a little bit of Mongolian. And then I thought, okay, but the horses are not drunk. I had this moment of clarity. And suddenly I had this light bulb coming in and thinking, oh my God, the horse are not drunk. And then suddenly I yelled like crazy. And I went against the horse. Like I left my hand and I went against the horses, and the horses been really shocked and surprised. And then suddenly they rise on their boss back legs, and those big drunk guy, they nearly fell off their horse. And one thing, it's the worst thing for a Mongol guy is to fall off a horse. That's bad luck. That's really a big thing in the culture. So they were so shocked, and then they turn around and they left. See? And then I kept going for nearly a month. And then one morning, I was really tired and I started to get exhausted. And one morning, I just wake up. Suddenly, something happened. I was the wind, you know, I was the sand. I was everything. I was all the element. I lose the identity of my body and I was part of everything. I just melt with all the surrounding energy. And just that morning just happened. And that doesn't last, unfortunately. But this is a perfect alignment. You know, for example, the monk in the Himalaya ranges where they go in cave and meditate for months. That's what they want to reach. They want to reach this melting energy with everything and be part of everything. And losing the identity of this body, which is sometimes doesn't help us much. But the power of our spirit is just greater than that body. And it just happened like that. So over the years, I tried to recreate that moment. I managed most of the time to do it. Most of expedition, I managed to do it for a little while. I reached that moment, but needs to go through. It's like a purge, you know. It sometimes happens after 3 months of walking and losing weight. And then suddenly you really light, you really align with everything. And just you are in a moment, whatever happened, you breathe the moment, you are in a moment. And this is all worth it suddenly.
That's so beautiful. I've been like out in like nature, far away where there's no one, once or twice in my life. And there's this duality where, you know, sometimes I feel like, man, like I'm this little ant in this big mountain and the nature's so tough. It's so rigorous. It does not care about me. Like it does not care. It's just this, you know, tough beast. And then there's other times where I'm like, I trust the nature, I trust the universe, I trust these trees and tracks that should lead me back to the shoreline. It's weird, this duality.
Yeah, but I think it's when we all got those moments where you're not aligned, you know, and then suddenly you are scared of things. So
Mm.
suddenly you be aware, you start to be aware of, oh my God, I'm in the middle of nowhere. If this happened and I broke a leg and I've got heat exhaustion and I've got this and I get bitten by a snake and so you just go through the list, you know, and you think, oh my God, I'm definitely dead now. You know, this is the brain. This is your little devil inside you, I always say, because, you know, the brain is like a good computer. It's like ChatGPT. It uses what you give it, you know, it just seeks knowledge. And then when you ask something, it just goes through the knowledge it's got and it gives you back something beautiful, incredible. But it's all based on the knowledge that it actually seeks. A collect is not clever as we think. It's a good computer, but if you will always look around, make a statement of the situation, it will always give you the points where, okay, I can die of heat exhaustion, snake bite, and broken leg, that's his job. So your job is to just use him for the good stuff, because we need him for the good stuff, good calculation, read the topographic map, read the quantity of water you've got, you know exactly how many water consumption you need per day. This is calculation, this is pretty down to earth calculation. And then you've got the other side of us, which is all energy and intuition and this magical part that we don't like to put word to name it, you know, in this. Especially in this Western society, the balance between those two depends where you are. If I'm in Paris, it's pretty good to use my computer to be able to be efficient, to do everything I need to do. But if I decide to go hiking for 3 months in a Tasmanian primary forest, I better be intuitive. And so I just remind me an experience in that forest where, you know, the trees are so old inside that forest that sometimes they fall down because they're old. And the roots, they don't have deep roots. They've got superficial roots, some of them. Inside the forest, it's really dark and it's really dense. So when one of those trees fall down, that took half of the area with them. So when I was hiking, suddenly you can hear the tree suddenly falling down and this horrible noise echoing through the forest. And then suddenly insect world, the animals world, the vegetation world just stop breathing, you know, for a second. It's an horrible feeling because if one tree fell near me, I will not be able to run because there's too much vegetation. So when you are in those situations, you need to trust something else. You need to believe on something else. You need to trust the universe. You need to trust that you are in the right spot at the right time in your life, and the universe will take care of you because you feel you're right in the right spot and you are worth it. And you've done your job. You are bringing something to the table as a human inside the human world. That's the thing. You need to bring something in the table for this humanity to grow faster. And if you do that, you will be protected by something that we don't know. We cannot put words in it.
How about when you're sort of in a sticky situation where you're not too sure where to go, what to do, what the solution is? Do you pray to God? Do you pray to the universe? Do you listen to yourself? Do you try to listen to nature? Which one of these things do you subconsciously start doing, you think?
None of it. I sleep.
Oh.
So when I've got a crazy situation, I'm stuck in some area and I cannot see a really happy ending here. You know, like this is a river, this is like the trees falling here, this is non-stop raining. So I stop, I put my tent, I set up my camp, and I sleep. And if I can afford that, of course. And after that, in the morning, that's a really good mental trick. In the morning, everything is more clear. Or even if you just take a nap, you know, when you wake up, your brain doesn't work the same. The brain works in a moment with what it brings. It do an assessment of the situation in a minute. So if you go through a really dark phase of your life, of your situation, of we can have drama in our lives, like we don't. For example, my mom died suddenly early 2023. Just 24 hours later, she was dead. She was in really healthy condition and then she was dead. So when things like that happen, which is really traumatizing, the only thing you can do is just regroup, sleep, and then that gets better. So when I've got a tricky situation, I always take a nap, sleep. Even if I left the camp like 10 minutes ago, I build everything again. I go inside my warm sleeping bag. This is my safe bubble. I sleep and then wake up and then I make a tea. The tea in my life, it's everything. So why? Because the gesture, you know, the gesture that I use to make a tea. So I take my, I build a little fire, or depends which expedition, or I've got a fuel stove. So those gesture, those movements, I've done it thousands of times, the same movement. And my brain knows how to do that. So I call that a diversion. So by doing this, it just make a diversion of your brain going nuts, you know, when your brain start to go in a dark spot. So your brain doesn't go in a dark spot because he's busy doing this and he knows how to doing this. And it just by making this, those familiar movements, he feel better already, but you don't know that, you know. It's just like a same circuit again, same circuit. He knows how to do this circuit. So he say, okay, cool, I know how to do that. And he's happy to do it. So you do the thing and then you drink the tea. And by the time you drink the tea, it just become a magical moment because your tea, it's just nourish your soul. And then you're ready to take on the tough question, the tough decision. Suddenly things get clear. So you need to find in your life, what is your tea moment? Maybe it's just go to see your fish, talk to your fish, give them food. Maybe it's just make some push-ups, just something, listen to music. You need to find this little disturbance, then your brain knows what it is and it can find the familiar circuit. And then again, you will be clearer anywhere. Yeah. So the tea for me, it's in expedition when things go to shit, because doors all the time, I stop, I make a tea. If I cannot sleep, I do that. I allow myself to that stop. I focus on the tea, I know. And then the brain's just, it's a new landscape inside my brain, new environment, new energy. And then I think really clearly.
One thing that has been recently sort of scaring me. So like, you know, I watched this documentary by this kid named Daniel, where similar to me, he traveled the world, he explored, saw so many different things, had an amazing life. You know, I know I'm strong. I know that I can survive in most circumstances. And I feel like I have control, you know, over my life. But then in that documentary, he got cancer at 29 and he tried to be positive. He went through chemo, couldn't beat it. Then sort of tried having like a healthy lifestyle, really tricked his brain and was like, I do not have cancer. And he sort of died a year later, and stuff like that scare me. And then, you know, you hear stories about, like, you know, tap water, vaccines, processed foods, all these different things that can sort of make you sick. And I'm like, I can have the most amazing life possible, and then I could get diagnosed with cancer tomorrow.
And also you can also not be diagnosed with cancer tomorrow.
That's true.
It's all about energy. So if you see this guy, I don't remember his name now, where he gets diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and his dream, he was a big entrepreneur and his dream was to do some open water race, swimming. I don't remember his name now. And he said, okay, my dream, it was that. I never focused on my dream. Now, fuck all. I don't want to hear any chemo, anything. That's going to be maybe 2 months or 3 months that I'm going to leave, not even that. So now I'm going to do what I want. And what he wants, he was just to swim in open water. So he went on a trip, every little tiny lake he met, every little inlet, every sea, every little body of water, he just felt so good just to jump in. Even if it's cold, it was cold, tough condition most of the time. And he just went swimming and he put his wetsuit on and he went swimming and more swimming and more swimming. And then I don't remember how long his trip was, but he came back, he went to see the doctor. He had no cancer left. So life, it's a little bit like that, you know, where if you do not do your job, your human job, not your day job, your calling. So my theory is we all got a calling written inside our heart, a mission if you want. And if you do not listen to that mission. And if you do not follow that mission, life will give you, it will slap you in the face and say, hey, you're not in the right spot there. This is not the sidetrack that I've got for you. The track you have to follow is in front of you, and you know which one it is, and you better go there. And if you're not there, life will do things to make you walk in the track you're supposed to walk. And I think, like, every time I go a little bit sideways, I do not follow my calling at 100%. I receive this little slap on the face, Now I can recognize them and say, okay, Sarah, okay. I've done it again. Now I know exactly what I have to do. I need to do this. And I'm back on track. And I do again what's actually changed, because my mission in life is really clear for me. I'm this little bridge between human and nature. And sometimes across the bridge, I'm in nature, full on. And sometimes I come back in with the human, my fellow human, and I do my job. I do what I have to do. I do speaking engagement. I write books. I hate to write books. I'm at the moment writing my 10th book, because books are magical. Books are really a magical, everything it's inside books. Books got energies, got tricks, got clue for people, got, if you read a book and you've got one click in your brain thinking, oh my God, yes, she's right. That's happened to me the same way, but I didn't recognize the fact at the moment where what it did happen to me. So books are really, really important. So I still go through this torturous time where I write books, because this is my job. This is the seed that I plant in this planet. It has to be done. And if it's books, well, it's gonna be books. I'd rather go walking than spending my time in the front of my computer for months and months, But no, this is my job.
How did you get that clarity on that's your mission in your DNA? It's easy to like want to go on hikes every day and do that for the rest of your life, but you know you have to write books. It's tough, but you also know that's what you have to do. That's what the universe wants you to do. How do you know that for sure? Like, how do you listen and be like, the universe wants me to do this difficult thing and it's hard, but I have to do it versus the universe doesn't want me to do this because this is bad?
Yeah, really good question. And this is, I think I've been lucky in my life at the beginning, because it has everything to do with your childhood. So the beginning from 1 to 7, that's where you kind of become the person you will be all the rest of your life. My mom, she was a really, 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 really intuitive person. And I was a wild kid. So I was wild. I had a strong character, a strong mindset. And, one of those kids, when you say no, get crazy. That I was one of those. And so she noticed that really early on, and she never said no to me. She will always say, Sarah, you want to make your do your homework, or you want to clean your room? I was like, oh my God, yeah, oh, I've got choice. Oh, I didn't see as a kid there was two crap choice. In my mind, the kids, it doesn't make the difference. I just had choice. And that was for me, that actually built my strengths inside me and my self-worth and my self-knowledge and I start to know myself really early on in my life because of my mom. She's been so clever. I come from a big family. So, you could be mixed with all the rest of the problem of the family, the logistic, all of that. But no, she didn't do that. She treat us the same way, my brothers, and we just grow up like that. A lot of freedom and a lot of choices we could make. And one day, I think 6 or 7 years old. I think it was six. They couldn't find me. I was not in my room, not in my bed. And so I left. I took my backpack, a little backpack with my dog, on a hike to, I come from the countryside in another side of Switzerland called the Jura. And it's a beautiful area, green and everything. And I went in a cave, like 1 kilometer away from home. And I slept in a cave with my dog and my little backpack overnight. And I can remember, in my kid's brain, I had these big bats hanging around the ceilings. And in my child brain, they were like that big, And in reality, they were like that, There is no big bat like that in Switzerland. They're only small, but in my brain, in my memory, they were massive. And I was, for me, that was the most beautiful thing ever could happen to me, sleeping with those bats in that cave. And I went back home the next morning, and the police was there, and everybody was agitated. Nobody knew where I was. And so that was my mission. I think I'm born as an explorer. You know, that was my calling. That's who I was at the beginning when I was a kid. And then I grew up, and you know, the neighbor of my parents' place, she become a doctor. The one below, she was a bio. She was studying biology, and everybody was doing big things. And then suddenly, the neighbor was asking my mama, "What is she doing, your daughter?" So, "Oh, she's walking." So at the beginning, I've been walking everywhere. I've been doing like you. I've been traveling. I've been walking. I've been experiencing life. And but I've been following my dream. I've been following what I had inside. And suddenly, people call me adventurer. And suddenly, 10 years later, I was an explorer. But reality is, inside me, I'm still this little girl, amazed about everything, curious about any natural events that I don't know. The lights fascinate me, you know, the trees, the birds. If there is no birds, I'm not going. Birds are everything for me. So that's why I in Australia, I walk a lot in Australia over the years. I walk more than 30,000 kilometers in the Australian bush. Yeah. So Australia for me, this land is really, it's like the land for my soul. Those pine tree here doesn't do anything for me. Give me eucalyptus every day. Yeah. And red sand, and a little bit of nice dry wind, and I'm happy. Yeah.
I was going to ask, because I do notice that a lot of your trips, you often come to Australia. Another thing I want to ask, like, did you walk through Alice Springs, Uluru, and how did you feel about that area? I was there once, and something about Uluru, the rock, it feels like a spiritual area.
Yeah, so you cannot walk there, actually. You
Oh.
can go to the national park and walk around the rock. It's a little trail, 12 kilometers, but you cannot walk through. It's a protected land there. All this area there, you cannot cross it. So I walk south of it, south of it. Yeah, over the years, because in 2002 and 2003, I started in Alice Springs, and I went up north, northeast to Normanton in the Savannah Way up there in the Gulf Country, and then I went east to the Tableland. And then I walk from the Tableland down to Katoomba on a Great Dividing Range, following the Great Dividing Range to Katoomba, to the Blue Mountain. And then I cross over to Broken Hill, Port Augusta, Ceduna, cross the Nullarbor Plain to Kalgoorlie, and back to Wiluna. And then I walk a part of the Canningstock Route to Coonawarrijie. And Coonawarrijie, then I went east to back to Alice Springs. And that was in 2002. Yeah, 2002, 2003. And you know, at the time, it's not like now. I didn't have a tracker system. I didn't have satellite phone. I had my little brother and I, we are really close. And the deal was every 4 months, he will be there with resupply and new gear and new boots. And for a few days and 4 or 5 days, we will have a campfire in a bush, and he will bring some jerrycan of water so I can wash myself. And then he will go back home in Switzerland, and I will keep going. So we did that every 4 months. He was there. But the beautiful part of that story is I will give him a location point from my paper topographic map, and I will tell him, well, I was doing about 1,000 kilometers per month. So 1 month before he came, I will say to him, "Oh, I'm gonna be in that point in 1 month's time." No other communication will actually be happening between those points, and I will get in the middle of the bush in that proper point, and he will be there with a crop tent and a secondhand four-wheel drive, and yeah, and that was how we did it at the beginning. Yeah, it was amazing though.
It's crazy how back in the past, before mobile phones, there was a trust. You know, if you say meet at the movie or restaurant at 6 p.m., you'd go to 6 p.m., they'll most likely be there. But now with phones, I'm like, if they don't show up, maybe they got in a car crash, maybe they got sick, or what if I'm late? How do I tell them? Like, that's all, like, it's so hard to imagine me living without phones. But back then, you just had to trust.
Yeah, and that was another, I think it was less stressful, but also we were doing less thing. So, for example, for me now, my assistant is not in the same location than me. She comes on location 2 times a week, and the rest she work from home. So this is possible because of technology. See, before I will have a landline and I will have an assistant in with an office hour. I will have an office, and things actually work really slower. Everything was slower, but work really well. But was everything slower? I think those days we do so much thing. It's so concentrate. That's what I think. It's not that good for human because we get stressed, and the stress is really not a good factor for our lives. And the stress is building up, and that's why go back to what you were saying. You start to be scared of about everything. We start to be afraid about just about everything possible, and fear is start to be happening when you are not centered and when you don't know yourself. And why we do not know ourselves? It's because we are agitated, and this agitation coming from outside in. And that's the stress, that's life, that's what happened those days in the world. But that's why we need to live from inside out, not outside inside. We need to lead with the heart from inside out. If you bring from the outside inside, you get stressed. Of course, if you look at the news, you open the news today and you look at what's in the news and you bring everything inside your heart, God, you're dead. This is not possible. You need to have a shield. You need to breathe. You need to nourish your heart. And then when you're ready, you go out and you look at what's happening. Okay, fine. Close the door. You're aware of that. And then you go back to your world. Yes, and we don't learn how to do that those days. This must be like teaching that to the kids at school.
Sarah, what is your current balance? Like, do you know how much months out of the year you need to be out in nature and how many months you need to be back at home on the laptop writing your next book and doing speeches and talks? Is there a perfect formula ratio that you've figured out?
When I start to get cranky, it's time to go. Yeah, when my family and the people near me start to say, oh God, you start to get cranky. I know it's the signal, like it's time to go, you know? Yeah, I can do that for a certain period of time, but then suddenly I reach a threshold where I know I've done the job, I need to go. Because my real goal, who actually feed my soul, it's not all that, it's actually walking. So I need to recharge in one stage, you know?
When you sort of get that feeling of you need to go, it's time for you to go out in nature, do you have an expedition already planned, or do you sometimes just go out on a trip for self leisure and there's no plan behind it?
There is not that many self pleasure because it's always, you know, it's always a matter of training, keeping up with the level of fitness that I need to have to do those things. So I guess for me, this is pleasure for me because I get so much out of that. And without that, I cannot do those expeditions. Because over the years now, the recuperation is slower, you know, and you get wiser, but the recuperation is slower. So you need to do the thing right. So you need to have a proper nutrition side. I've been plant-based for 5, 6 years now. And before that, I've been vegetarian since year 11. And then you need the physical level. The body needs to be trained all the time. You cannot stop like 2 weeks. It's not possible. So it's a mix of that balance, that work-life balance all the time. So even if I go in vacation, it's not vacation. I will be mixing everything and doing some recon trip, you know. I will do some little, for example, in Australia, you've got amazing trek. We call that the Bibbulmun Trail. It's in the West Coast and it runs from Perth to all the way down to Albany. It's 1,000 kilometers or something. And it's amazing trail. So I use that trail often for my training purpose. So I've done it like probably 5 times by now. So I just hit the trail. I don't think it's just this amazing trail where you've got a little hut every 20 kilometers or 17 kilometers. And there is water there. You don't think about anything. You've got your shelter for the night. It's an easy one. Not that many people doing from Australia. It's more people from overseas, and it's just beautiful and goes through the bush type, different type of bush, sandy ground. Suddenly, after 700 kilometers, you hit the sea, and there's the beautiful coastline, an open coastline, and it's just a beautiful trail. So, if I want some vacation, I will do that. I will come in Australia and I will do that. And at the same time, it's a training ground, and I really enjoy that trail there. It's a beautiful one.
Sarah, are you planning one expedition at a time, or do you have the next two sort of planned out? And is it one each year? And then do you have to like quickly get a bunch of sponsors? And how do you make it all work?
Yeah, so that's it's all happening at the same time. So it's usually I write the book. Like for example, now I just came back in October from my expedition in Australia, my last one. I'm gonna finish writing the book around April. And in April, then I put the final touch to the book, you know. And the book, it's the end of the trip, really. So then I can think about something else. I'm not allow myself to think about something else until I finish the book, and then I will come really quickly. And because I've got thousands of ID per day, and I will get ready for the next expedition and getting trained and talking about it to my sponsor and the people who actually are around me. And you know, you need to be creative all the time because things moving so fast, the market is moving so fast. Not that such a thing as a sponsorship anymore. It's like an evolution of things, and so you need to be creative on of making income in a different way. You need to be, for example, I launched beautiful project last month called lettersfromexplorer.com. It's in three language, finally. It's in English, in German, and French, and you can actually subscribe to a letter. Then I will write every month a beautiful story, and I've got girls working with me regarding the illustration side, and you will receive at home these beautiful letters from one of my expedition stories, and with a little collector card with an animals for the kids and for the adult. I talk about tea, and then you can have like a subscription and for 6 months or 12 months. And you need to be creative. You need to think about new things. The thing is, you cannot sit and relax for 2 minutes because you're dead. You know what I mean? You need to be creative. You need to recharge your mind. That's why you need to recharge your mind, your spirits, because you need to be on point all the time. It's not like having a building a company and then you think, okay, I'm selling this and this and this. I'm good for 10 years. I'm going to adjust a little bit my products and that's all. Now, every expedition, you need to talk about the expedition to new potential sponsor, and you need to make people interested about what you're going to do. You need to bring everybody together, and you need to basically to sell the expedition before you actually do one step. That's the tricky part, actually. Yeah.
One thing I found as I sort of go through this journey of life and I try to figure out myself more and more and learn myself, figure out what I like and sort of push on all the different sort of aspects of my life, it becomes harder and harder to find like a partner or soulmate or like a right-hand person. Is that something that you sort of went through? Because like you live such a unique life, it's hard to find someone that can complement or even relate to sort of what you've been through, Sarah.
Yeah, that's why I take few of those. No, but it's a really good question because it's quite complicated to find, as you say, what we call a soulmate, because that soulmate, the question is, what's going to happen? Is going to complement you, or is going to tie you down, or is going to change your way? You know, and has to be a beautiful partnership. If you do not have a beautiful partnership, that will be putting you off course of your mission. This is what's tricky. So you've got a mission, your partner's got a mission. Are you two mission can actually melt together and be a beautiful, powerful partnership? If it doesn't do that, it's not worth it. It's not. So you need to find this. When you add up that partner of yours, when you add up the partner, you need to be more powerful together. Your light plus his light has to be a beautiful, bright thing. If it's not beautiful and bright, no, don't bother. You lose time.
I agree. Sarah, are there any sort of dream expeditions that you're planning or you eventually want to do? I know the recent one, I remember I was watching a TEDx of how you really wanted to do Northern Australia and you went down to the middle and that was one of your dream expeditions. Are there still many, many more dream expeditions that you want to do?
Yeah, I've got one, but it's a tricky one. It's a Socotra Island in Yemen. And Socotra Island, it's the island of the fire tree. They've got this crazy beautiful tree. It looks prehistorical tree. It's just a crazy beautiful landscape. And you know, I love the baobab trees. I love this kind of, it's the same like in Tasmania, in those remote valley where I walk, where I suddenly I felt like, oh my God, dinosaurs could actually walk here, you know, like. Like you felt it. It's a weird ancient land, and that's why I really love that. And Socotra Island is one of those places, but it's in Yemen, and they've got the war there at the moment. ISIS is there, and it's complicated part of the world at the moment. But passion is my strong suit. I will get there one day. That's one of my dream expedition, or internally.
That is so cool. I think you've done so many things. One thing I want to ask, when you're in Australia, did you ever come by Aboriginals, tribes as you're walking through Australia, and what was that experience like?
They are amazing. They are amazing. All of every time I have many encounter over the years with them. Every single meeting, it was amazing thing happening every time. And because there is one reason also, I think, because I always listen to them. So for example, if they say to me, here we've got a secret land, do not go there. Somebody died like 10 years ago. We don't want you to go there. I will actually walk 200 kilometers around that spot to not go straight and to actually honor the sacred land. There is some spot in Australia in the desert, you're not supposed to be there. So this is the owner of the place. So you listen to the owner of the place and you do not go where they say don't go. So I always walk around, and most of the time I do a lot of detour to not go in the wrong spot. And for some reason that I don't know, they always knew. They always knew where I walked. And they always, and when they arrive, that was in 2002, when they arrive in this little community, and the traditional owner there, the boss, he come to me and he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, good girl, because he knew that I went around and around, you know, like, yeah, he's a good girl. And with this little smile, that's all. That's all has to be saying, you know. For me, they are such amazing people. They actually capture, they breathe, and they live through their history. Some of them still today, they live as close as nature than we're supposed to live like that. All of us in this planet, all of the tribes today in the world, in all the world, they've got this deeper understanding of this link between the universe, our human experience, and the land. And we never listen to them. I don't know why, because they've really got the clue. They've got the clue about most of our worries today. They've got the clue. They've got this spiritual link with Mother Nature that we lost. One thing that I really love about them, it's really the sense of humor. You know, everything it's made for a good laugh. Everything, you know, years ago I was doing my first expedition in Australia, arriving in this community, and this guy look at me and he say, oh, you look like a bird. And I was like, oh, I was so proud of myself, you know, thinking, oh my God, I look like a bird. I'm so happy about this. And he said, yeah, you look like a jaribu, you know. A jaribu, it's a really, really long bird, ugly, ugly long bird with long legs with a really big beak. You know, like big and long legs, and it's like a prehistorical bird. And I was like, oh my God. And so they've got this sense of humor, and I really love that. Everything has to be laughable in one stage, you know. If we take ourselves too seriously, let's go back to the ancient time where they say most of the religion today, like, you know, the Buddhist and all that, we need to be able to look at ourselves from outside, because ourself is the ego. And if we take ourselves too seriously, we nourish the ego all the time and we become egocentric. But if you're able to get outside of yourself and looking at the thing, I'm thinking, yeah, no, Sometimes I say, oh, Sarah Markey, explorer, really, can you not do better than this? Really, when I fell in the river or where I miss the point of something, I'm always like talking to myself, thinking, oh my God, can you not do better than this? Really? And it has to be a distance between who you are, who you think you are, and who you are really. And has to be light, has to be, don't take yourself too seriously. You're not better than anybody. We are just human beings in this planet trying to do our best. That's all.
Sarah, are there any things that you would recommend to people if they want to learn how to tap into that oneness state, sort of, one with nature, really feel how everything in the world is connected and get to that present state? Like, is it through meditation? Is it through going on hikes? Is it through silent retreats? How do people get closer to that tribal sort of state of mind?
A tricky question because it takes time, that's the thing. But I think the shortcut will be to be exposed to nature as much as you can in a regular basis. Not, it's amazing things to be able to do a retreat, of course it is. But what's really most important, it's in a regular basis you are exposed to nature. So if you are living in a city, you've got a break, take 1 hour break, go in a park, get barefoot in a park and breathe and eat your sandwich there, barefoot, lay down, breathe, look at the birds, and go back inside your office and work. You need to be exposed to nature because nature, it's like a recharging your phone. It's the plug. Nature, it's just plugging like you plug energy to your phone. Nature is the source of energy for us because we are from nature. That's why we don't understand. Like, that's why when I walk, when I do crazy expedition for months and years, I don't get sick. I get stronger. I get powerful. I get everything. I'm like superwoman out there. It's not because I'm good. It's not because I'm trained so much. It's just because I plug to the earth and I'm one with nature. That's the only reason. And if I can do that, you can do that. Everybody can do it. I'm not different than you. We all the same. It's just a matter of be exposed to nature. And also by being exposed to nature, we will understand nature a little bit more. And we will understand human a little bit more, and all is gonna be okay.
When you're hiking and taking thousands and thousands of steps, is your mind just clear? Or are you thinking a lot of things? Like, what happens 2 months into a trip? Like, where's your mind at day to day? What are you thinking when you're walking for 10 hours, 12 hours each day?
So at the beginning, you've got a type of memory, two types of memory inside us. So at the beginning, you walk, you walk, you walk, and then you can still hear the voice of your family, your partner, your friend. They're still inside you. They're still with you. And then you go through the physical challenge where you have to be focused. So you are living in the moment. And so then you go through the pain. Pain, it's a good thing. I know it's crazy to say that, but pain is always what's helped you to go further. Without pain, there is no evolution, unfortunately. So pain, it's a vehicle. Pain, it's a tool to bring you somewhere where you will not go naturally. So you go through the pain, and then suddenly, after, normally depends of which expedition, but for example, the 3 year expedition, that moment come after 6 months, took me a long time to get there. And some expedition, the last one took me 3 weeks. And suddenly you're just there. Your brain don't think, you're just there. And this is your intuitive side. This is raw. I left Sarah Marquis at home, and this wild animal is doing the job that he's supposed to do. And then I'm there breathing and reading the landscape and feeling where the water will be, looking at birds carefully because birds got all the answer in the world. Birds are the guide when you are out there. They are little guides who will tell you everything what's happening. So I think it's a natural process where after a few weeks, near months or something, you're just happy to be there. Most of the people stop walking before that happened. And also, when you walk, your spirit get clean, your body get clean because we absorb everything. So bad energy, stress, the energy of the environment where you live, the noise, we are like sponges. So we kind of bring everything in, and then suddenly we think, oh, I've got pain here, I don't know why. Well, I do know why. You need to clean that. You need to make it fluid, it has to be flowing, it has to, and walking is the best. It's what we're supposed to do. You know, we're supposed to work organs like the eyes, sight, the all our human organs, they are made for one speed. It's not bicycle, it's not airplane, it's not motorbike, it's walking. So when you walk, you get to the perfect speed and you can smell and breathe and by observation bringing the information in, and that's at the right speed. So you don't get stressed. That's a normal speed. That's human speed. It's not faster. So then we reach the point when I was talking at early on. We reach the point of alignment, and this alignment, it's what we want. That's the only goal. We need to be aligned. We need to be in the present moment. We need to be centered. The water inside is quiet, and then anything can happen. We're ready.
When you're sort of walking up a hill, or you need to get to a next location before sundown, and you're rushed, or you're sort of out of alignment, like what do you do in those situations where you need to get to somewhere before sundown? You need to cross this mountain, and it's quite steep, and you're really tired going up it. Is there a way to tap into that alignment despite that?
Most of the time, you don't put your tent at night. Do not do that. You need to get ready. It's a poor planning if you have to rush to get to the top. So if you need to go to the top, you just wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then you do work all day, always, all around the clock to be on the top before sunset. You don't want to put your tent at sunset. And do not do that. There is
Planning.
that, and there is the other golden rule, which is do not put your tent near water point. That's another point. Never. Because the water can rise, the water can just appear, the water can do whatever they want. And also it's always a water point for animals. So you're stealing water, you make a disturbance in the environment for the other animals who actually, that's the only water point mostly in Australia. When you've got a water point, it's normally the only water point in kilometers and kilometers around. The animals, if you camp near a water point, they will not come, and they will, who knows what's going to happen to them if they don't drink that night, you know? So you need to respect the natural order, and you need to be able to read that, and times and connection with the land help you to do that.
I can speak with you for hours, Sarah. I know you have so much stories and knowledge. Two questions I want to end with. Question one, any recent discoveries that you have been now implementing to your day-to-day life?
For me, one thing I really put a point into my day. As I said at the beginning, it's my green juice, my yoga. This is not going anywhere. This is really like the central pillar of my day. And I learned more years past, I learned that this is really, really the center of the success, of the end success down the line when I will be in the middle of Australia doing my expedition or whatever. If I do not do that, I will not succeed over there. My last expedition, for example, I ran out of food for the last 2 weeks. And so I decided to make a ration. So I start my day at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I eat half a cup of a muesli, and then I go around the clock all the way to sunset again, and I had half a cup of quinoa at night. And that was at the end of my expedition. And that just happened to be at the beginning of the sand dune of the Gibson Desert, which is a big, massive red sand dune. So you make two step and one back, two step and one back. When you do those moments where it's already in a tough, you're already in a tough physical spot, and then let's say, oh yeah, we take the food out, okay, and then oh yeah, no, we add up some, you know, it's like a video game. We add up some dunes. Oh, what's she gonna do now? You know. So when those tough moments arrive, if you've got the discipline and then you've been implementing in your everyday life, it's easy busy. It's just like you just do it, you know, factually do it, and one day after another. And most of the time, it's just one step at a time. So this deconstruction, mental deconstruction of the thing, help you to actually reach the end of the day. So the discipline, I will say, to answer your question, the discipline of this pillar at the beginning of my day, it's really, really crucial for me. I will not, for any reason, not do it.
That makes so much sense. I guess the last question, I probably know the answers. What's your main focus, main sort of goal for the next 6 months? I guess it's finishing off your book.
Yeah, I've got many projects going on, new project, and my assistants change over the years, but they used to say to me, please, Sarah, don't go to the bathroom, because every time I was coming back from the bathroom, I will have a new idea. So I've got those amazing, crazy ideas all the time. So we working on a few of them at the moment. Yeah, so I always make it fun and make it new. We'll see. I can tell you that in 6 months. But
Yeah.
I always got new project, because at the heart of things, I'm an entrepreneur, you know. This is my the spirit of taking risk is in me. So it's always the mirror of what I'm doing. So in expedition, but in real life also, it's what I do. I take risk, and I play hard, and in that field, and it's just yeah, I love it, because when you don't need much, you know how you can only succeed, you know.
Sarah, where can people find more of you, get your books, stay up to date on all these new ideas and projects? What's the best place for people to find out all about these things, Sarah?
Probably my website, which is saramarquis.com. So, and then on the front page, I always update what's going on and what's happened, and what's gonna be next also. And yeah, so we and also Instagram is a cool way. I like to use Instagram. It's a fun tool for me. It's more easy than any other tool for me. And explorer underscore Sarah Marquis.
We'll link everything below and we'll pop it up on the screen. But yeah, thank you so much, Sarah. I really loved this chat. I wasn't expecting it to be really, you're so wise, spiritual. I learned so many things just chatting with you today, and just hearing you just sort of listen to the Aboriginal sort of elders and walk all around, that shows how egoless you are. You put the ego to the side and you have this bright energy, and you're so strong. So I loved connecting with you today, and this was a beautiful conversation for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to you, because I think when you pop up in my Instagram, I said to my assistant, could you check that guy? He looks cool. This project is cool. And also, I want to say something. You did your work. You know, not everybody does that. You did the work. And I said to Sonia, my assistant, I say, oh, let's connect with him. I want to do something with him. Yeah. So I'm happy to be here today with you.
Thank you, Sarah. I have to give a bit of credit to my assistant. She helps me with the research, so I can't take all the credit, but thank you very much.
Thanks for everything. Anyway, good luck to you for the future.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Guys, if you made it this far into the podcast, thank you so much for your time. Please let me know your thoughts. If you guys have any questions whatsoever, please message me on Instagram. Let me know your thoughts on the episode. This was another episode of the podcast. I'll see you guys next week. Peace.